Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
And I'm John Graham. Happy to be here.
John Graham is a putting coach, and he's here with us. He teaches some tour players. He used to teach some regular golfers, right?
I used to, yes.
Not so much anymore.
No.
Because your tour players take up all your time, as they should. We let you pick the topics today. The first topic you chose is, in your opinion, what putting training should look like. So why don't you kick us off? What should it look like?
Sure. So I think the important pieces is that it shouldn't be very long. I don't like to see people out there with like a towel under their feet, just kind of grinding away putt after putt after putt after putt. But it should be very structured. And by the end of it, the person should actually feel like they've either improved or maintained the level that they were at. I hear from a lot of players that they feel like they do this putting routine that they have, and they chuck the box and they go home or go to the range or whatever is next. But don't really feel like they've done anything. They've just done the work, but not really felt like they've accomplished the 1% better that they're trying to get.
Gone through the motions, sort of?
Yeah, gone through the motions. Like, they don't necessarily attach what they're doing to improvement. They attach what they're doing as something they're supposed to do. It's a chore.
Mm.
And I think if it's done well, it should have some fairly tangible and manageable and measurable metrics over time that you can kind of go back and see, okay, I actually have gotten better at this. I can do this drill in a different way or in a different amount of time, so on and so forth. But I think it needs to touch on each of the pieces. So I'll kind of run down basically what I would say the majority of my clients will do, not in terms of the exact specifications, but the general structure of it.
Yeah, what are the pieces?
Right, so the first part should be some kind of stroke maintenance station. So I call it a home base station, the place that they go to make sure that everything is okay. And this station usually takes a little while to build, and it's organic, and it changes over time based on how things are going. But basically, after I'll do an assessment with someone, go through their history, talk a lot, kind of watch them a little while, we'll kind of put together what this station should look like. And it's something that is portable, something that is creatable on their own. I don't need to be there to do it. It can be some combination of tees or a mirror or a putting mat or some other kind of training aid that kind of ticks off the boxes of, is my path manageable and normal for me? Is my face control tight enough that the ball starts through a window that we create that is humanly doable over and over again? And all the things that I tend to struggle with kind of get covered in this area, at least as far as the club goes. Now, there's certainly some things in a putting station that we can't cover, like, you know, is my weight in the right place or things of that nature that are a little bit maybe more feel-based that either I or their caddy will kind of keep an eye on just so that they can make sure that everything's kind of okay. But, you know, strike point is something that should be checked. So some kind of tiger drill should be part of the station. I usually will have a line on the ground just to help with alignment and visuals and things of that nature. And then to help me create where the start line gate would be. So the ball would go through some set of tees or an arch or something of that nature that is tight and restrictive to that they know that they've started the ball on line. And then if they use a mat, they can have tees in to kind of check their path. If they don't use a mat, they can still do the same basic idea. But it's some kind of basic, you know, fishbone type skeleton type deal that is fairly repetitive that they just go and check into maybe 5 minutes at the start of their training session.
And even if they don't use a mirror, do they do something to know that their eyes are in the right place?
I mean, some guys will drop a ball. I would say the mirror is the most common. I don't see a lot of people getting super hung up on that their eyes are in the right place. I do think it's important, but it's not something that I see vary all that much from player to player, from day to day.
Yeah.
But it's a thing.
Would you say this home base, then obviously it's different for every player, right? That setup is different for every player.
100%, right. Correct. It's completely individualized to the player's stroke tendencies, start line tendencies, and things of that nature.
To our listeners, you just said this is like a 5 minute deal, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
You know, again, I'll see college players all the time, again, sit in the same spot on a mirror, on a gate for an hour, just hitting the same putt over and over and over.
Yes. Yeah. I often start a talk with a bunch of college players or high school players or decent juniors with a statement that usually kind of makes them very uncomfortable. And I'll say it here just for your listeners is, you know, most of you don't read the greens good enough to work on your stroke.
Love that.
So all the work that you're doing on the stroke to make it better might actually make you hole fewer putts.
Everyone needs to replay that. Replay that and listen to it like 10 times.
Brief aside, how good are tour players at reading greens generally when you first start working with them?
It really depends on the player. Some are actually quite good. Some are less than quite good.
Less than quite good. We'll leave it at that. After they do their home base work, what do they do next?
So usually what they do next is some kind of a touch drill. And it's usually a putt make specific one. So we'll vary this particular drill based on the course that we're going to play. So if it's a, let's say it's a U.S. Open or a tight course, greens are small, they're going to be doing more chipping, they're going to miss the green more often. We'll have a drill that's maybe like from 8 to 12 feet. And if it's a place with big greens, wide fairways, it might do it from 10 to 15 feet. And I've done a bunch of variations of this, but it's basically some kind of leapfrog type environment where they'll start at point zero, and I'll put out ball markers that are spaced a different amount based on how far away that they're putting to. And let's say they're doing like a 8 to 15 or 8 to 12 foot or so. So I'll put a ball marker at 8, one at 9, one at 10, one at 11, and one at 12, about a foot apart from each other. And they've got to, depending on how I'm feeling, they'll have to do each of the four in a row, randomized or in order. We'll kind of mix it up depending on how things are going. They got to hit one from 8 to 9, then from 9 to 10, then from 10 to 11, and 11 to 12. And if anytime they miss, they have to start over. Sometimes it's short to long. Sometimes it's long to short. Sometimes I have the caddy call out a number. Call me out a number 1 to 4. Okay, 1, then 3, then 2, then 4, whatever the case may be. But they've got to do four of these things in a row. As the distance gets farther, I'll make the size of the zone bigger. So it might be a foot and a half, might be 2 feet. There was one player, his name's Kevin Yu, who this was an area that he really struggled in. And we started at a particular zone distance. And as time has gone on, we just continue to shrink it. And instead of changing the drill, we change the difficulty so that he can see over time that he remembers how difficult this drill was when it was a foot and a half apart. Now he's doing it when it's only a foot apart. And it's small little gains like that that are difficult to pick up on while you're doing the progress. But when you hit putts on the course and you walk up to and you just tap them in, or you make one more that just gets the right speed a little bit better, it's only one putt a week that really makes a significant difference on tour. So I don't have to do a significant change in the real term amounts, but the actual net dollars and net score amount is humongous if I can get one more putt to go in a week.
Yeah, and I think when people talk about distance control, they often think about, oh, I have a 35-foot putt that I want to hit 35 or 36 feet. They don't think of it on a 9-foot putt.
Exactly correct.
But if you hit that 9-foot putt 9 feet 2 inches, you might make it, but you might also hit it 11 and a half feet and still make the putt. But the reads might be very, very different.
And that's correct. And one of the things that we tend to find is there's a certain reading speed that a player naturally has. Some guys are a little bit firmer, some guys are a little bit softer, and they don't really notice it until you kind of put them in this environment and you say, okay, well, this is what you normally make it at. So sometimes I'll use an actual fake hole and I'll place it in different places relative to the zone they're trying to finish it. So let's say they're trying to finish it from 9 to 10 and they tend to make a little bit more aggressive. I might put that hole at like 7 feet away. So can I got to roll it through the hole and finish it in the zone or something like that? And it just continues to kind of test them, not only just on their distance control, but as soon as the image of the hole gets placed in front of them, there's a different part of them that turns on that it's like, okay, now I got to roll it through this and get it. They almost start to change the order of the task that now that the hole is there, it's like, okay, well, now I just got to get it to roll through this hole, and they forget about the distance part. Mm. So at times when I integrate the two of them, it helps to kind of bridge that idea that the goal of the putt is to hit it not only the direction you want to hit it, but the total distance you want to hit it, and hope that the hole just gets in the way of that, because that's what your read is going to be based on, the total distance that you would have tended to hit this thing. And that, again, that changes over time based on if a player is, you know, really struggling with being tending to be short or tending to be too firm. We kind of start to push their touch based on what we see in this drill and what we see on the course and what they talk about in terms of comfort. There's just some guys who will never be comfortable hitting it firm. It's like, I just can't do it. when I watch the ball go farther away, I get really nervous and uncomfortable, even though it's 2 feet by, if I had left it a foot short, I feel more comfortable because it didn't get further away from me. And then something that's maybe something for a mental sports psych guy to deal with. But at least in this environment, they can kind of see it.
Yeah.
And that's usually part two of what I would do for like a recommend for a training session.
How long do they do that? They have to successfully do it 4 times in a row?
Yes. And usually one is uphill and one is downhill. So they've got to do it twice. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to me that I would have expected, based on just the math and the physics of it, that the uphill one would be much easier for guys. But it's not the case. The downhill one is consistently more easy for them to do. For whatever reason, there's a different level of comfort with making a stroke that doesn't need as much acceleration as an uphill one does. And they can more closely match a feel for the downhill ones. Because the downhill putts, obviously, the feels are closer together.
Right.
So it's like, okay, well, this feel equals this. So it's, okay, it's just a little bit more. Where the difference between an 8-foot putt uphill and a 10-foot putt uphill is a much larger feel difference, and it's harder for them to connect one feel to the next.
Yeah.
But I would have thought, just because of the margin of error is bigger, that the uphill one would just be mathematically easier.
Right.
I just don't see it in the real world. Downhill putts are easier for guys to control, surprisingly.
Yep. So what's next?
So what we would do next, we would either flip-flop between some kind of making game or a lag distance game. So the lag distance game, and this is one I would highly recommend for everyone to do, and it's for putts outside of 32 feet. So if we're talking strokes gained, something that is a strokes gained plus if you two putt it.
Right.
Basically, I've kind of modified this based on some of the numbers from Mark Brody. You take the starting distance that the putt is from, and 7% of that starting distance is the safe zone that they've got to get the ball to finish in. For example, if they've got a 40-footer, they've got to hit it within 2.8 feet, anywhere of the zone, right, left, short, or long. And if they finish it in that zone, they get 2 points. Anything outside of the zone, they get -1. If they make it, they get 3, and they play until they get to 10. If their distance control is good and they do it in 5 putts or less, or 5 holes or less, that's quite good. Usually the goal that I give the guys is to finish it in 8 holes or less. I've had players that had poor distance control. When I met them, it would take them 20, 30 minutes to finish this drill.
They never finished. It was all negative.
Yeah, like it was, right. Like the lights are coming on, the car is starting to pull the car up. Like it's, it can be really eye-opening. This is another one I usually do for a lot of college players who think that their distance control is good. It's like, the goal is to see if you can make your first putt actually positive, good enough that it represents a positive advancement, not just, okay, I got it within 3 feet or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, a lot of the training type things that I like to do take me out of the judgment factor of it, where the player does whatever the task is and they can see for themselves, okay, I suck at this. Okay, I'm improving at this, or I'm not improving at this. So that judgment doesn't have to be made by me. They can be made by the player, which I think is more powerful than if I come along and say, you know, you're really struggling on your distance control. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Probably makes you less likely to get fired, too.
I've learned that over time.
I think the belief and the buy-in from the player is stronger that way,
exactly,
though, right?
Correct, right. Like I'm going to give you a task that doesn't sound exceptionally difficult, and if they can't do it, they're like, okay, I need to work on this. He's right. I'm not good enough at this. And then, like I said, so that can take anywhere from, 5 minutes to a half an hour. And sometimes I've had to leave a client and be like, okay, I'm going to go to the next person. You go ahead and finish this. You know, the guys are competitive enough that they'll do it. Like it means enough to them that they don't like looking like they can't do something.
Hmm. And a regular golfer could probably do 10% because it's easier math.
Exactly,
and
correct.
Maybe anything outside of 25 feet or something.
Exactly, right. And you just modify it based on what you need. And 10% is how I started it. And it was just a little easier than I wanted.
That's too easy.
Right. And then when I talked to Mark, it was like, it actually is closer to 7. So it worked out. And that, you know, the caddy's got a calculator with their phone. And it just, there's one guy who's got like an alignment stick with the different numbers of inches on it. So he just says, yep. no, fail, pass. And so then the last thing would be this making game. Something that ties in all the skills that putting is. Like putting is start line, it's alignment, it's distance control, it's screen reading. Now it comes to making, which is what they're going to actually get paid for. It has two variations. Both are strokes game based. One is a short make game, and one is kind of like a mid-make game. One for what I would call kind of cleanups, up and down saves, and then one for opportunities. Par putts and birdie putts. And it's a little bit of a mix of both. So the first game is a It's an 18 putt game. You're going to do it at six different holes with three balls. Most of the games I do in a group of three. So sleeve of balls, everybody seems to bring out that. And it starts with a putt from 3 feet, 4 feet, and then 5 feet, different angles to the same hole. And then it goes to four feet, 5 feet, 6 feet at a different hole, switch holes again, 5 feet, 6 feet, 7 feet. And it expands out until the final one is 8 feet, 9 feet, 10 feet. So it's a total of 18 putts. If you add up all the strokes gained to it, if you have 12 makes, that's roughly about strokes gained zero. Anything more than that is a plus. Anything less than that is a minus. And it's just something that we track over time, looking for distances that are repeatedly being missed or particular angles that are repeatedly being missed. And again, it's usually at a place where greens are going to be missed often, or it might be Tuesday we do short makes. Excuse me, Wednesday we do these mid makes. And the mid makes is basically the exact same game, but it's just kind of blown up. So it starts out at 3 feet, 5 feet, and 7 feet, and then blows up from there, 5, 7, 9, 7, 9, 11. The last one is 13, 15, 17. So if you putt well early, it really gives you an opportunity to score well. Mm-hmm. And in that particular game, nine makes is a strokes gain zero. Anything more than nine makes is a plus. Anything less is a minus.
Make half the putts, you've gained strokes.
Correct. Yeah.
Or zero.
Sorry, exactly right. Yeah, it's slightly a plus.
Yeah,
which always makes them feel good. If it's zero, a little yeah. plus is better than a zero.
That's right.
But that would be something that is contained within an hour. Putting practice, I think good putting training should be fairly short and fairly intense. Putting can be boring by its nature. And if you do it too long, I think you check out and you don't really get anything for it. But it checks all the boxes. It has a little bit of competitive nature to it in itself. It's got a scoring component to it. And it's something that guys kind of feel comfortable knowing that if I do these things, I know that I've done okay. And they also see improvement so far, which is really good. They will go to their other coaches and start to look for something closer to that. Like they go to the funding meeting, they know exactly what they're going to do. I'm going to do this. 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 This is working on this. This is working on this. This is working on this. And I think it's easier to contain that in a putting environment because the variables are a little bit more manageable. Maybe you can do more of it in a chipping, pitching environment or bunker environment. Probably really difficult to do in a full swing environment. There's probably similar types ideas, but putting is pretty manageable, pretty containable in that way, so that I can structure it pretty strictly.
Yeah.
As I sit and listen to that and I take notes on that, John, to our listeners, again, this is somebody who's working with the best putters on the planet. And the majority of that time, it's gamified. It's not super technical. It's not diving into, you know, weedy area of what putting is. It's gamified. And that's what the best players are doing to get better.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. I mean, maybe once every 6 months, we'll actually measure the stroke. I'll bring out Sam.
Sure.
See how things are going. It's pretty manageable. Like if the home base station is built well,
I love that.
You can kind of keep it pretty much under control. Every once in a while, it's just good to see it. So the numbers are there. We can track it over time, but creating the environment is the longest part to get started. It's like, what do I actually need this home base to look like so that when I'm alone, I'm maintaining things okay?
Yeah, this wasn't part of the agenda, and we'll get to the last part, which was the games. But very quickly, mechanically, what are the things that you've seen commonly from some of your poor tour players?
I would say this is going to sound really simple, but I wouldn't say there's much mechanic issue. The issue is more the intent. Hmm. They don't know what they're about to do. They want to make it. They know that.
Yep.
And they know they're supposed to read it, and they know they're supposed to hit it kind of far enough to go in, but it's not clear enough. Like if I ask somebody, what swing do you make to hit it 60 yards? They know exactly what it is. They know how far it goes. They know what it feels like. They know what the ball position is. They know all of these things. And if I say to somebody, okay, well, what do you do to, what does a 10-foot putt feel like? I have no idea. Well, is it uphill or downhill or whatever? And it's a little bit different. Because a 60-yard shot doesn't have as much variation to it. But I don't think they assign the feels as strongly to a putt and the way to learn it as they do some of the other features in the game. I would ask people when I first meet them, it's like, okay, they got this putt here. Like, if this doesn't go in, like, how far should it go? Like, what's the total distance you're trying to hit this? I don't know. Well, if you hit it firmer, would you choose a different line? Well, I'm supposed to. Okay, well, would you do that? I don't know. That's, to be fair, oftentimes good putters don't come to a putting coach.
Right.
Like putters that are struggling come to a putting coach. Either they're streaky or they've never been good at it. And there's usually pretty clear reasons why. Part of it is they don't have the right intent and the right picture and the right framework. Rarely is it because their stroke is so bad that they can't start it relatively online.
Right.
They may not have any idea why one putt went 20 feet and 30 feet because they felt the same to me. It's like, well, you don't know what the feels are then. Like, you really need to learn. You need to really dive into what you're feeling and what you're experiencing. I've had one guy who didn't know he was supposed to hit it solid. Didn't even care. Didn't even check. Like, are you hitting it in the middle? I was like, I don't know. Did you hit on the toe? I don't know. I don't even know what the difference is. And like, you're one of the best golfers in the world.
That's
like,
crazy. That's crazy.
So I'm having an iron shot. You know, when you hit that solid? Oh yeah, absolutely. When you hit on the toe? Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Okay. Well, it's important.
That was half a groove in. Nope.
It's important there, right? Yeah. Okay. It's important here too.
Yep. Yep.
And sometimes it can be things that small. So technically I would say, if I was going to mechanically say, the biggest issue is usually acceleration.
Yep.
Guys, they don't move the putter well. Their tempo and rhythm changes dramatically based on this nebulous picture that they have of what they're about to do. They just don't have a clear enough picture of what equals what.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. You wanted to talk about what some of the games that you like to teach are.
Yeah. So this is
some of the games you like people to have, other than the ones that you gave in the putting practice.
Yeah, so again, I would say most of my games are fairly either difficult or eye-opening. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily because they're hard, but just because it's like, okay, this is really what this means. So I'll give two, for example. The first one is another a lag putting game, and this is one that I'll do with the players. We'll kind of mix it up between the one I already mentioned. And it's a very simple game. It's just five putts, all from, again, 35 feet or out. And all they have to do is two putt each one. And if they do that, the game's over. We know they've got a strokes gain plus. Everything's great. If at any point they three putt one, now they have to do a consequence game to make up for the stroke lost. Like to show you what you've lost with this three putt. Like, you've lost one full shot. Here's what you have to do to get it back. You've got to make 2 8 footers. You've got to make 2 out of 3 10 footers. You've got to make 6 5 footers or something of that nature that comes back to what one full shot equals. And the guys are usually shocked at how difficult it is to get that shot back. It's like three putting is easier than they thought it should be, but getting the shot back is way harder than they thought.
Yep.
So it kind of showed them what, you know, what they need to do when something goes off. Cause I've always had a difficult time accepting that lag putting wasn't important. I think that it is. And I understand that the argument that, well, if you just short putt better, it makes up for having poor distance control on a longer putt. But I just don't see it in the real world as...
No, the mental toll of having to make a bunch of 4 footers for second
exactly.
putts is...
Even
if you have a good week and make a bunch of them, ugh.
Right. You almost feel like you know that it's coming. Like, I'm going to miss one of these. And like you said, the mental strain going from the green to the tee, it's like, oh, okay, man, this is... After 72 holes of beating yourself up that way... It just wears on you. So I like the guys that hit it close. So again, it's all vary what the consequences are. I used to try this game where they had to finish plus. That didn't go well. If they didn't do the consequence, they went minus again. And then they had to do it again. And to do it again, it's like I never get the shot back. Like, yeah, it's really hard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even just doing it the way that I do it now is eye-opening enough for someone with poor distance control. It really becomes really obvious, like, how fast shots go away and how hard it is to get them back. So that would be one. The second one is a drill that I think I first saw from Donal Scott. He's a putting coach in Ireland, and I've modified it only slightly, but it's the same basic idea. And this particular game has every client that I have worked with is on this leaderboard of how well they've done it. So it's like now this semi-JG golfer client competitive leaderboard thing. But it's a drill with 5 tees that you put around the hole from 4 feet. And I have this question with them the first time I do it. It's like, we're going to do a game that kind of represents what you need to do to win a golf tournament as far as putting goes. So if you've got 5 4-footers, that week, how many of those five do you think you should make? And they'll say, well, yeah, I got to make them all. Okay, that's right. So each one that you make, you've got to move the tee back 1 foot. As soon as you miss one, that tee comes out of the game. When all five tees are out, you're gone. Game's over. So you started with 4 feet, you made five. Now you've got five putts from 5 feet. If you're going to win this week, how many of those do you think you got to make? I think I got to make them all again. Yeah, pretty much. So now you're at 6 feet, you got five tees left. All right, you got 5 6-footers. What do you think is a good make rate to win? We'll say 4 out of 5. So we pull one tee out, there's 4 left from 7 feet. How many of those do you think you got to make to win? 3 out of 4. All right, now you got 3 tees left from 8 feet. How many of those you got to make to win? And eventually this comes out to roughly about 20 makes. If you can get to 20 makes in this game, you've putted well enough to possibly win a golf tournament on the tour. And it's difficult.
That sounds hard.
it's depending on the hole that's chosen, it can be impossible. Not impossible. It can be very, very difficult. But it doesn't seem that difficult when they're doing it. The thing that it really shows is how valuable making short putts is. Because as soon as the tee's gone, you don't get it back.
Right.
So if you miss a 4-footer, you've lost not only that putt, but you've missed the chance for a 5, you missed the chance for a 6, you missed the chance for a 7. All of the opportunities that tee presented are gone. There's a guy who's a Latin tour player, actually, I think, who's got the highest score of like 31 or something.
Wow.
Now, I didn't see it, but he's an honest guy. So he's on the leaderboard. I've certainly seen definitely some good scores in the 20s. And I've also varied that game depending on certain personalities that are a little bit more sensitive than others, where if they miss one and they make the next group, they get that tee back and they can keep going. Mm. So let's say they've got the first five to start with, they miss one of the 4-footers. When they get out to the 5-foot, if they make all 4 of the 5-footers, they get to put that tee back and kind of go on from there. Again, for some people that if they're struggling with putting, the game, it's really...
You're going soft, John.
It relates back to the getting fired part, I think. Yeah. But again, it's another eye-opener.
That's a great game, though.
I told you about a game I want to share that I told you about this a bunch of years ago. Whether it's from 8 to 12 feet or 10 to 15 feet or something like that, you make a box, right? You just make a little box that extends that range. It's not too wide, but it's wide enough to fit a few balls going different directions. And you number 6 balls 1 through 6, and you kind of put them in your pockets or something like that, and you randomly draw one out, and let's say you get the number 3 ball. You got to put that into that space where 1 and 2 can fit in front of it, and 4, 5, and 6 can go after it. So that sounds like a lot like what you said you do, but maybe tougher.
Maybe tougher, yeah. Depending on how big the space is.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, because you gotta picture the space. It's not delineated exactly. Yeah. And you got to think like, okay, this is the 5 ball. I want to get it pretty close to the back edge, but I need to leave some room for the 6.
Yeah.
And I've had some people like the 2 ball gets a little too close to the front. But here's the thing. You're allowed to kind of hit the 2 ball with the 1 ball. So you could nudge it back there.
Okay.
So and fit the 1 in there. See? But you got to be really accurate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. That's but I've cool. had some people occasionally save their round by doing that. And then your score is just how many times it takes you to pass.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that.
Right. Because it's only 6 balls. So you can run that through pretty quickly.
Right.
It's not super easy, but if you're decent at your distance control, it's not too bad.
I like that. Yeah. We've always thought pretty similar in that way of training being at least as difficult as what they're going to deal with, aside from the mental part, which we can never reproduce.
Yeah, and I like that that's randomized because you're just randomly picking a number out of the thing. And, you know, you're happy if you get 1 or 6 first.
Right.
Although 1, you got to think about where you want to put that ball, because if it's right in the middle, you got to fit the other balls past it.
Yeah, you got to be able to get the balls around it.
Yeah. Where can people, I mean, tour players know where to find you, but where can, you don't post as much as you used to on social media, but where can regular golfers find anything about John Graham?
I'm still on Twitter at John Graham Golf. Instagram the same, John Graham Golf. I think I still have a Facebook page that would be under the same arrangement. I would say probably Instagram I would be on more than anything else nowadays. I don't have a website, so I can't really help you out there. But Instagram would probably be the best place to reach me.
We have a website, and it's The Spin Axis, and our social media is also The Spin Axis. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.